continuing with Canto 2, Chapter 4, The Process of Creation, the title of the chapter. This morning we'll be discussing two verses, texts 16 and 17. We won't be discussing the technical things that start to come out with how the Lord performs the creation. We're still hearing the outbursts of ecstasy of Shukadeva Goswami, just thinking about his position of being dependent upon the Supreme Lord Krishna to do anything, and verse after verse after verse he's in just ecstatically glorifying Krishna. The main subject of these two verses is their glorifications of Krishna and Krishna's position being fully pure, we heard yesterday, fully transcendental, completely out of this world as far as guna and karma. He's in a transcendental position. And so also is the process that connects with him. So, going back, Shukadeva Goswami gave the following answer to Maharaj Parikshit: was the duty of everyone. The topmost duty is to engage in unalloyed devotional service. So, this is now connecting the unalloyed devotional service to the object. So the process is being glorified, was being glorified. Now the object of that process is being glorified, Krishna. And because of Krishna's position, that process of glorifying him is as transcendental as he is. Bhakti is as independent as Krishna is, as purifying as Krishna is, because of its connection with Krishna. And all the other processes are dependent upon bhakti. We'll do it again. Krishna is the supreme independent. He's not dependent on anybody, anything. That which most directly, completely connects with Krishna is the bhakti process, which is not dependent on other things. Conversely, other beneficial processes or activities, they derive their benefit from bhakti. They're dependent upon bhakti. Bhakti is independent, as Krishna is independent. So he's glorifying Krishna and the process of devotional service as supremely pure and independent. That's the message. Text 16. Vichakshana, highly intellectual personality. So is the first word of the verse. Here at the university, we have some highly intellectual people that are not connecting that intellect Krishna. And so, from the Bhagavatam perspective, Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. Only so many zeros. More zeros doesn't make it more impressive. But out of one before those so many zeros, then it becomes something substantial. So, in this world, since the beginning of time, being highly learned has always been respected. From the Bhagavad perspective, when one becomes highly intellectual, and with that discerning capacity, takes shelter of the personality of Godhead, aha, that's the fruition or the culmination or the real fruit of that. And the next verse is saying any other, for that matter, tapasya and performance of religious sacrifices and charities and is to take shelter of the personality of Godhead. So let me offer my respectful obeisances again and again unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, Subhadra, Shravase Namo Namaha, the highly intellectual. Simply by surrendering unto his lotus feet, are relieved of all attachments to present and future existences, and without difficulty progress toward spiritual existence. Brahmagatim. Vindantihi Brahmagatim. Gata Klamas. So Gat Brahmagatim comes out several times in this purport. We'll go there first. In the purport, Prabhupada refers to Jiva Goswami, who comments on this verse and says, Brahmagatim means attaining the spiritual form, like of spiritual substance, like Krishna, whose form is of spiritual substance, and one resides with Krishna in his abode and engages in transcendental loving exchanges with Krishna. And he gives many, many scriptural references to support that rendering of Brahmagatim. Because Brahmagatim might mean different things. So, it's by the process of devotional service, only by, specifically by surrender to the personality of Godhead, that one can achieve that perfection. Through devotional service, through surrender to Krishna. Now, there's activities of devotional service, shravanam, kirtanam. Here he uses the word ikshanam, seeing. The process of devotional service. Because Krishna is supremely pure, as established before, the process of bhakti is also supremely pure. So taking up those activities, one's hearing capacity becomes, the hearing power becomes purified, the seeing power, the speaking power. We can use them, and they may stay in a range of mundane activity, or we can connect them to Krishna in a mood of surrender and trying to serve Krishna, and that way the senses become purified, the mind becomes purified, the soul becomes purified, because we're connecting with the Supreme Pure. The argument is being made that the process of devotional service is superior to the neutral, it came earlier, the neutral meditation. Inert senses bring the mind to focus upon the Supreme. That's good. Better, purify the senses. By bringing the senses in contact with the Supreme in devotional service, then the senses become purified, the mind becomes purified, the soul, because the soul is dynamic, not inert or static, the soul then achieves its fullest potential of purification, because it's the soul's natural position, to be in a relationship with the Supreme Soul. Natural. The other is less natural, somewhat artificial. Sit, do nothing. The soul's dynamic. Do nothing. Well, you're trying to subdue the agitations and disturbances of the senses and the mind. So, like Prabhupada's example of a child that's misbehaving in the class and the teacher says, go sit in the corner. Look at the wall. How long is a child going to be able to sit in the corner and look at the wall? They're active. So give them positive activity. That's much better. Positive act. So the senses cause us trouble, go sit in a corner. Or don't be engaged in troublesome, be engaged in purifying activity. So then the senses serve to elevate, the mind serves to elevate. Intelligence directing both serves to elevate. And the soul becomes in its natural position. Therefore, Brahmagati. Gati means goal or destination. Brahmagati, in the fullest sense, in the Bhagavat sense, is the fullest sense. It means spiritual form, spiritual activity, direct spiritual association with the Supreme Pure through the various processes. So, again, going back to what these two verses are in essence presenting, because it was previously established that Krishna is the supreme source of everything, and as such he's fully pure, and by his touch one becomes purified. Now it's extending that understanding. All glories to Krishna, who brings those who have achieved something remarkable by worldly distinction. If they surrender to Krishna, then it's the perfection. So Bhagavatam wants us to not just become nice or elevated or respected, come to perfection. And it's by contact with Krishna through devotional service that can come. Prabhupada, in the purport, he quotes verbatim three verses from Bhagavad Gita, the ones that speak about surrender. 1866 speaks directly about surrender, so he covers 54, 55, 56. 55 is Manana Bhava Mad Bhakto, and 54, Sarva Guyatamam Bhuyaha. I'm going to describe to you the most confidential understanding. And Prabhupada has given it a very different spin in his translation. It's not literal, but poetic, very beautiful. My dear Arjuna, you are very dear to me. And therefore, only for your good, I will disclose the most secret part of my instructions. It is simply this. Become a pure devotee of mine, and give yourself unto me only, and I promise you full spiritual existence. Brahma Gati. That's how the connection is. By which you may gain the eternal right of transcendental loving service unto me. Just give up all other ways of religiosity and exclusively surrender unto me, and believe that I will protect you from all sinful acts, and I shall deliver you. Do not worry anymore. Beautiful. Paragraph. persons who are intelligent take serious notice of this last instruction of the Lord. The sign of intelligence is yes. And because of having comprehended or ascertained that is the message, that's the essence message, then surrendering. Then he does a bit of a summary of the message of chapter 1 and chapter 2 of this canto. He says, knowledge of the self is the first step in spiritual realization, because that's the title of the chapter, first step in God realization. Understand the transcendental nature of the self, like second chapter Bhagavad Gita. We're not this body, soul is eternal, different from the temporary, it doesn't come into being, will not come into being. The bodies have come into being and will come into being and are always doing that. But souls don't. The distinction between spirit and matter. And we're on the spirit side, covered by this body. First step in God realization, which is called confidential knowledge. And a step further is God realization, which is called more confidential knowledge. The culmination of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is God realization. And when one attains this stage of God realization, he naturally, voluntarily becomes a devotee of the Lord to render him loving transcendental service. So the third stage is act in that God realization spirit. That's serve God. Oh yes, God exists. And remaining neutral, just acknowledging God exists. I'm a spirit soul, not this body, and God exists. Very nice. Then what? You serve him. But the most confidential knowledge, and so the most intelligent persons, Shukadeva Goswami is saying, that highly intellectual individuals, vichakshana, they surrender to your lotus feet. Charano pasadanat. Simply dedicating oneself unto the lotus feet. Sangam, with attachment. Vyudasya, giving up all other things completely. Upayata, for present and future existence. So, voluntarily, one becomes a devotee of Krishna. Then Prabhupada expresses something very important, very interesting. This devotional service of the Lord is always based on love of God and is distinct from the nature of routine service as prescribed in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, or Dhyana Yoga. And he builds upon that statement. So there's routine, like you must observe certain things. Like even with the yoga system, cleanliness, regulation, non-violence, respecting the lives, respecting life, respecting other living beings. There's yamas, there's codes of conduct that one should do, that one should accept. Nice. But this devotional service goes beyond that, like the distinction between religiosity and being in direct spiritual contact with Krishna. In secular America today, this distinction is very common. People make a distinction between religion and spirituality. To them, religion means, you know, you go to church or synagogue or temple and you follow the rituals and that's a religious person, and they like to say, so-and-so, or I'm not a religious person, but I'm a spiritual person. Well, so-and-so is very spiritual. They don't follow any regulations. But they're really spiritual. And when they say spiritual, it means generally sub-religious principles like nonviolence, compassion. You know, they feed birds and whales. They're really, really spiritual. They care about the life of others. You know, they're really into nature and preserving, very ecologically aware, and, you know, for really spiritual purposes. But actually, it's just sub-religious principles without any kind of regulation. It's a sentiment. It's a mental configuration that's called spiritual. Because in Western philosophy, in Western everything, the distinction between what to speak of between the soul and the coverings of the soul, namely mind and intelligence and false ego, that's not at all clear. Nowhere in Western philosophy is that clear, what to speak of. No. So they think the mind is, you know, how the mind is configured that makes one spiritual or not spiritual. It's just a mental state, which is not what the Bhagavatam is saying. The Bhagavatam is saying is spiritual is where love of God is the fuel, it's the driving force. Not the religious connotation of routine service. Rather, good things, austerity, charity, compassion, self-sacrifice in so many ways, selflessness. We're going to hear about this in the next report. Varieties, there are all kinds of varieties of selfishness. Personal selfishness and extended selfishness. So, in other words, just jumping over to the next report already. If where there's charity or philanthropy or altruism or doing good works from the Bhagavad perspective, that's extended selfishness. It's me and my group. Or I may extend beyond my group to another group. But it's, you know, benefiting me, or I derive some sense of well-being or happiness from the sacrifice that I'm making. So it's the conditioning by the quality of goodness, in other words. That's just extended on the bodily platform or the bodily conception of life. Somebody's hurt, so I open a hospital do something. It's not that those things are bad, but if they're not on this platform of surrender to the personality of God, they stay material. One doesn't benefit oneself spiritually, one doesn't benefit the other person spiritually, Krishna's still out of the picture, and one stays in this cycle of birth and death. However, take the same activity, and Prabhupada even says it directly, take that same activity here. Advancement in learning, economic development, philosophical research, study of Vedic literature, or even the execution of pious activities like charity, opening hospitals, and the distribution of food grains should be done in relation with the Lord. The aim of all such acts and endeavors must be the pleasure of the Lord, and not the satisfaction of any other identity, individual, or collective. So what's the verse from the first canto? Some said here, Hari Toshino. What's the verse? That's got the same message. Shama Eva Hi Kevalam. But go ahead.
Atat
Some sit here on Toshi. And the translation? Roughly? Atak Pumbir Drijasresha Varnashram Mapat Vibhagasha. The Varnashram duties. Haditoshanam. Satisfying the personality of Godhead. They have no other purpose. And this one?
Unless we develop a taste for hearing about Krishna.
Huh?
Unless we develop a taste for hearing about Krishna,
whatever we do is uselessly. He gives the example in the second purport of a pile of rice and a pile of chaff, where the rice has already been removed. What's the value of the chaff where the rice has already been removed? However big the pile may be. The real purpose of the chaff is to get the rice, or the stalk of rice is the kernel of rice. Similarly, these activities that in this world are always praiseworthy, charity, austerity, philanthropy, praised in this world, without the surrender to Krishna component, it's chaff. It amounts to nothing. Because the real fruit of the stalk of rice, which the chaff is part, is the rice. Rice removed. So those activities, unless directed to God consciousness. So, see the symmetry between Canto 2 and Canto 1. By understanding Canto 1 nicely, it helps one then appreciate the beautiful poetry of the Bhagavatam, where that idea is embellished in yet another way. So back to this point, the activities of devotional service are always based on love of God, distinct from the nature of routine service. Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, Dhyan Yoga. Just repeats the point. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are different instructions for such men of different categories. And there are various descriptions. Varnashram Dharma, Sannyas Dharma, Yati Dharma, the renounced order of life, controlling the senses, meditation, perfection of mystic powers, etc. So, laudable. It's in the Vedas. It's Vedic. Do it. Perform these things. But one who fully surrenders unto the Lord to render service unto Him out of spontaneous love for Him factually assimilates the essence of all knowledge described in the Vedas. The elevator and the stairway. Example. Or one who has been engaged in devotional service is to be understood as having performed all these other activities. Whether you perform them, the fruit of performing them properly is in your hand. Or it's a qualification that you've attained just from this one thing of surrendering to Krishna. One who adopts this method very skillfully attains perfection of life at once. Well, again, it's pointing to perfection. And the perfection rests in this act of surrender. And within that surrender, this perfection of human life is called Brahmagati, or the progressive march in spiritual existence. So one can look at some part of a spiritual trajectory and say, aha, aha. So where is it all leading to? What is that destination? What is that stage of perfection? The unfolding of a seed into a sprout, into some leaves, and then gradually growing and growing. And so where's the thing finally end up? the flowers and the fruits, like the manjaris of the tulsi, provide the opportunity for growing more tulsis, because there's some seeds for making more tulsis. The stage of devotion, maturing of the devotional service, when real attraction and attachment for Krishna becomes manifest, the heart has become pure, and such person can awaken Krishna consciousness very easily in others. It's like the seed. That's what's wanted. So love of God is the essence of devotional service, even in the immature stage, distinct from depending upon this ritual or that performance or that knowledge, which doesn't mean, okay, we don't need any regulation, and we don't need any knowledge, we just love Krishna. But it's not saying that. But the fruit of those things is attachment for Krishna, love for Krishna, the stage of perfection, of being with Krishna always. So the summary. Bhakti yoga is the highest quality. This is Brahma's prayers to Krishna, chapter 14 of the 10th canto. Shreya Sratim Bhaktim Udashyate Vibho. Bhakti yoga is the highest quality of perfection to be achieved by the intelligent person in lieu of performing a large quantity of spiritual activities. It's a specific example in the verse. There's a handful of paddy. It's more valuable than heaps of paddy skins without any substance within. Similarly, one should not be attracted by the jugglery of karmakanda, gyanakanda, or even gymnastic performances of yoga skillfully. One should take to the simple performance of kirtan, smaranam, etc., under a bona fide spiritual master, and without any difficulty attain the highest perfection. Sometimes the phrase is used, the devotional service is the fifth dimension, and the meaning of that, or Bhagavad Dharma is in the fifth dimension, meaning beyond Purusharta, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, beyond even Moksha, certainly beyond Dharma and Artha and Kama and Moksha is devotional service. So it's the beyond liberation, or so liberation is included and the others are included, but it's those who are thinking simply liberation, that's like escapism. I want out of here. I don't like this program anymore. I want out. That kind of liberation, salvation, is inferior to or lesser than the attaining of loving devotional service. So it's one who takes shelter of devotional service. It's a direct process. It's like a theme. It's a direct process that connects us with the ultimate goal. And one who does that need not attend to the fastidious details of all kinds of rituals and karmakanda and so forth. Bhakti is independent of those things. It can deliver perfection independent of those other things. One may do with those other things, or some of those other things, observances of different types. One may not. The devotional service is not to be neglected. The goal and the principal activities of hearing and chanting. In the next purport, Prabhupada takes this phrase again, and it's like, repeats it the attainment of perfection, the attainment of perfection. So he's drumming the drum and tooting the horn and, you know, drawing our attention to this is what the Bhagavad message, this is what Shukadeva Goswami is expressing here. Come to perfection by focusing upon Krishna. That stage of perfection follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-auspicious Lord Sri Krishna. Again and again. Because the great learned sages, the great performers of charity, the great workers of distinction, the great philosophers and mystics that chant Vedic hymns, the great followers of Vedic principles, cannot achieve any fruitful result without dedication of such great qualities to the service of the Lord. So it's the positive statement and the reverse negative statement. When they do, this is what they achieve. If they don't, they won't achieve. And again, why is that? Philosophically, Krishna is supremely independent. The process of realizing Krishna, bhakti, is supremely independent. The other processes are dependent upon that. Take those other processes and depend upon Krishna, surrender to Krishna. Engage that in Krishna's service. Engage the fruit of your education and the intellectual capacities and skills and so forth in Krishna's service. Here we go again. Advancement of learning. Purport. A charitable disposition. Political, social, or religious leadership of human society. Philosophical speculations. The practice of the yoga system. Expertise in the Vedic rituals. And all similar high qualities in man serve one in the attainment of perfection only when they are employed in the service of the Lord. So, in the attainment of perfection is the theme. So, Krishna, one more time, Krishna is supremely pure. You connect with Krishna through the process of devotional service. And you can connect all kinds of things in that devotional service and it will take you to perfection. But don't miss Krishna connection. Because then it's just like, you know, a beautiful turban with a big, beautiful jewel and the head of a drowning man. It'll just help him drown more quickly. Better to throw away the turban. Go the other direction. Without such dovetailing, all such qualities become the source of trouble for people in general. The turban. Go the other direction. Everything can be utilized either for one's own sense gratification or in the service of one other than oneself. But let's be really clear here. He says there's extended selfishness. There's personal selfishness. And then there's extended selfishness. Extended selfishness means we covered this, but it's mine. As I and mine. So I'm doing this for my family or my country or my group of people. My. So it's extended selfishness. I and mine. And how do you get out of that loop? For Krishna. It is one's real self-interest to serve the interest of Krishna. Why? He's the source of everything, including myself. Like another common example, the hand giving food to the stomach instead of just enjoying the food. Not going to work. Self-interest doesn't work. Extended self-interest doesn't work. But real self-interest, or Krishna, interest with Krishna, because he's the source. There's no qualitative difference between personal and extended selfishness. Theft, for personal interest, or for the family interest, is of the same quality, namely criminal. A thief pleading not guilty because of committing theft, not for personal interest, but for the interest of society or country, has never been excused by an established law of any country. People in general have no knowledge that the self-interest of a living being attains perfection only when such an interest coincides with the interest of the Lord. For example, what is the interest of maintaining body and soul together? One earns money for maintenance of the body, personal or interpersonal. But unless there is God consciousness, unless the body is being properly maintained to realize one's relation with God, all good efforts to maintain body and soul together are similar to the attempts of the animals to maintain body and soul together. So, the purpose behind our activities, the conscious, deliberate objective, makes all the difference. How Prabhupada connects all these things in his purport is very, very nice. So along with the concluding point here, Samsidhir Hari Toshinam Atapim Pir Tridjas Reshtas Varnashrama Vibhagasha, how the duties of Varna and Ashram connect with pleasing the personality of Godhead, is he connects it with Bhagavad Gita 9:27, where it is said that whatever we may give in charity and whatever we observe in austerity must be given over to the Lord and be done on his account only. The expert leaders of the godless human civilization cannot bring about a fruitful result in all their different attempts at educational advancement or economic development unless they are God conscious. And to become God conscious, one has to hear about the all auspicious Lord as he is described in literature like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And these are points being made by Shukadeva Goswami before he even speaks the message. But this is the essence of the message. It's whatever the detail of the message is, it's glorification of the personality of Godhead, who, just by hearing about him, connects us with the Supreme Pure and will purify our senses, mind, intelligence, free us from false ego and carry us to Brahmagatim, the spiritual realm. Even we're practicing way down here, that it carries us to the goal. Bhagavatam is very nice. And Prabhupada's purports are very, very wonderful. So any questions, thoughts on the verse? Yeah.
When I was reading this recent conversation with one of my friends, he's practicing some kind of Maya or the flavor. And I was wondering, like, this message is so clear that Bhakti is the one which delivers, Bhakti is the one which is the supreme knowledge. Why is it that the Maya one is to object this? I always understand, even if somebody reads yes, but sometimes it seems like the message is so stark and clear that this is what it is.
Well, there's several reasons in combination. One of them is that they're attracted to the idea of becoming God. Very attractive. This is in direct opposition to that. So they can't hear it. Another is just the kind of conventional thing that someone who has over a period of time practiced something and practiced something and practiced something and practiced something, they just are habituated to that something, whatever it might be. So it's hard to hear. They hear in terms of that which they're habituated to. That's their frame of reference. Another is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, that one who even hears Mayavad philosophy is drinking poison. You know, it's the whole notion of formlessness of the Supreme, it takes away the spirit of service. That's why if a devotee is offered, would you like liberation? If there, where there's no service to the personality of Godhead, that's like hell. You're offering me, would you like, you know, to go to hell? No, thank you. Because without being able to serve, and so their whole philosophy is there's no service. Although then they backpedal and do philanthropy. Vivekananda's idea was, why spend time growing tulsi? Better you grow eggplant. And then you can take the eggplant and feed hungry people. What are you going to do with a tulsi? Do philanthropy. Don't. If tulsi is the bestower of bhakti, why do you waste your time with bhakti? Just grow eggplants. So it damages, if not destroys, the mood of service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that it's more difficult to bring a Mayavadi to the position of devotion than any other thing. I made a rabid Indian Christian the other day. We were on the same plane going somewhere. He came, you know, did the usual thing that he asked some innocent thing. You're like, oh, have you also just come from Dallas? You were on the same flight. You saw me on the same flight. Then that was, you know, just to start a conversation, and then right away just started ripping and offending Krishna. You know, I was in the particular mood I was in, I just pointed, said, get out of here. And you're an offender. I love you. I want to see you in heaven. I said, good, and I want to see you in heaven, so get out of here. The more offenses you make, the further you... If you don't leave, I'm leaving. I'll call the police. Stop this. And he's, because he was making, I won't even repeat the remarks he was making. Just offensive. So, But that person is easier to deal with than the Mayavadi, as far as, not a rabid offender like that, but someone that has an attachment to something else, a thoughtful person can be brought to consider the attachment that you have. Just like some family was saying, when we grew up, we worshipped all kinds of things, principally in home. My grandmother worshipped Lord Shiva, and she taught me, and so I worshipped Lord Shiva. But we also worship Krishna, and now I've got this Lord Shiva thing. Now how do I deal with it? Because I can understand with my head, I can understand, but my attachment says that Krishna is the supreme. But I have this attachment over here. So, but impersonalism is a fundamental offense. It's hard. But it's not impossible. In part, it depends upon. Sometimes people just pick that up because they're frustrated. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. One has to overcome vitaraga bhaya krodha. Just out of frustration, impersonal ideology can be accepted. And through association, that frustration can dissolve and one can feel altogether different about oneself and about life, and Krishna has done that. Nirvisheshu shunyavadi paschitya desatari. There's a whole other conversation, but the Western countries are filled with impersonalism and voidism. It's not just the Shankaracharya brand coming from India. It's the whole idea of God, accepting God, but not being able to accept God as a person. It's impersonal. Accepting God. Okay. What does he look like? What's his name? What are his qualities? What's his form? Impersonal. It's an obstacle. But Krishna is all attractive, and his loving dealings are all attractive and purifying.
Was wondering, attaining the perfect stage is being stressed in the Bhagavad Gita. Said that those who are highly intellectual, they attain that stage.
They attain the stage of surrender. You like Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Mam? Or Patite?
This desire for attaining the highest perfection.
They may not be interested initially in the highest perfection, but they're interested in intellectual pursuits. And such an intellectual may come across Vedic wisdom and find, oh, this is very attractive to their intellect, not perfection, just. And then as their intellect gets wrapped around the subject matter, oh, their initial pursuit may not be achieving perfection. Same for us. Now, we didn't start Krishna consciousness with the idea of, I want to become a perfect person. We started Krishna consciousness with some other position. But the Bhagavatam is pointing us to that. Gently, not, twisting our arm and making it hurt, but it's pointing to that. generally an intellectual is not interested in perfection, they're interested in intellectualizing. And, you know, any subject matter will do. And perfection isn't the goal. It's intellectualizing. The happiness derived from, like, child's play. And the pride that goes along with how good they are at the game. In schools, I've found from the kids, there's like they have Nintendo competition, and somebody's like the king of Nintendo, and somebody else is king of skateboards, and somebody else is king of the football team, and somebody else is king of intellectualism. So they with their happiness is being, you know, best guy on the mound, and they can push everybody else off because they got the best intellect. The debate team. And it doesn't matter what subject, it's just intellectualism. The one who advances in that arena of intellectualism and comes to the point of surrendering to Krishna, that the message is all of their sinful activities can be dismissed. They come swiftly to Brahmagatim. Anything?
Let's see here. You said that we give constant activity to the senses, and then we relax, and after some time, then the senses become revived.
Well, but you're using the word relaxed. It's not like we have to be the opposite of relaxed, like, you know, wired or something. In a frenzy, as opposed to, so we can, by relaxed meaning, I meant to say negation of the senses, just subduing the senses, giving the senses a tranquilizer. So that doesn't purify the senses. That was the point. So in devotional service, we shouldn't be in a frenzy. We should be steady and committed and active, as opposed to passive. I think that's the word that I use, is passive. And extending our senses into the arena of devotional service, purifying the senses. So, does that help? Yeah? It's the principle of spiritualizing something. The standard example is putting an iron rod into fire. Iron is not fire, but you put it in fire, it becomes fire-like. Hotter, hotter, hotter. Red hot. Touch it to dry leaves. Now it's a fire. It acts like fire, although it's an iron rod. So our senses can become spiritualized, fully purified, by engagement in devotional service. Now, it's not just a routine work, as it's said here. It's with the understanding, the consciousness that we want to serve Krishna by cooking for Krishna or worshipping Krishna, making garlands for Krishna, reading Krishna's message, speaking Krishna's message, walking to the temple, using our legs for Krishna, using our senses for Krishna. That spiritualizes and purifies because of contact with Krishna, because he's the Supreme Pure.
Yeah. just want to clarify. You were saying that spiritual is not just a state of mind.
Yes.
But even in our practice, we actually try to bring back the mind. But
yes.
It's just the object that we're trying
yes.
to bring back.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You got it. So what's the distinction to your question? Several. One of them is the frame of reference. Frame of reference is when we bring the mind to Krishna, we're really clear from the statements of scripture who is Krishna and what thinking about Krishna favorably. What does that mean? And where there's no frame of reference, someone may carry in the mind a conception, because mind carries conceptions, carry in the mind the conception of being spiritual means, you know, as being spiritual. I'm okay, you're okay. It's all one. That's spiritual. With no frame of reference. But I heard that phrase, and something, 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 and go feed the pigeons in the park, and that's being spiritual. But people have so many ideas of what being in the mind with no frame of reference, no authorized scripture and direction of application. Even if we have the application, have the teaching, we may not be applying the teaching in the proper way. The difference in all of this, you know, there's things that are how to properly carry out the ways of devotional service is something that there's authority behind it. It's not just my sentiment, it's in my mind. Prabhupada often spoke like that. You know, this is an authorized process. Supposing, you know, like with worship, so many things go on in the name of worship that looks like it's spiritual, but may not at all be spiritual. But within the mind, somebody's thinking spiritual. That's the distinction. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much.